the wolf's ears cup for and tuned in on some distant message from the tundra. Mayax tense and listen to. Did he hear some brewing storm? Some approaching enemy? Apparently not. His ears relaxed and rolled to his side. He sighed, glanced at the vaulting sky, and he was painfully aware of her predicament. Here she was watching wolves. She, Maya's daughter of Compuchin, adopted child of Martha, citizen of the United States, who peeled at the Bureau of Indian Affairs schools in Barrow, Alaska, and 13 years old wife of the boy Daniel. She shivered at the thought of Daniel, for it was he who had driven her to this fate. She had run away from him exactly 7 sleeps ago, and because of this, she had one more title by the sex standards, the child divorced. The wolf rolled to his belly. Amarok, she whispered, I am lost and the sun will not set for a month. There is no North Star to guide me. Amarok did not stir. And there are no berry bushes here to bend under the polar wind and point to the south, nor are there any birds I can follow. She looked up. Here the birds are bunting and long spurs. They do not fly to the sea twice a day like the puffins and sandpipers that my father followed. The wolf groomed his chest with his tongue. I never dreamed I could get lost. Amarok, she went on, talking out loud to ease her fear. At home on Nuviak Island, where I was born, the plant and birds pointed the way for wanderers. I thought they did so everywhere, and so great black Amarok, I'm without a compass. I've been
going now.
Yeah. It had been a finding moment when 2 days ago she realized that the tundra was an ocean of grass on which she was circling around and around. Now, as that fear overcame her again, she closed her eyes. When she opened them, to heart skipped excitedly. Amarok was looking at her. Eli, she called and scrambled to her feet. The wolf arched his neck and narrowed his eyes. He pressed his ears forward. She waved. He drew back his lips and showed his teeth. Frightened by what seemed a snore, she lay down again. When she was flat on her stomach, Amarok flattened his ears and wagged his tail once. Then he tossed his head and looked away. Discouraged, she wriggled backward down the boss heap and arrived at her camp feet first. The heave was between herself and the wolf pack, and so she relaxed, stood up, and took stock of her home. It was a simple affair, for she had not been able to carry much when she ran away. She took just those things she would need for the journey, a backpack, food for a week or so, needles, a man clothes, matches, a sleeping skin, and ground cloth to go under it, 2 knives, and a pot. She had intended to walk to Point Hope. There, she would meet the North Star. Then the ship was that bring supplies from the state to the towns on the Arctic Ocean in August when the ice pack breaks up. The ship could always use dishwashers and laundresses. She had heard, and so she would work her way to San Francisco, where Amy, her pen pal, lived. At the end of every letter, Amy always wrote, "When you are coming, while you come to San Francisco." 7 days ago, she had been on her way to the glittering white postcard city that sat on the hill among trees, the enormous plant she had never seen. She had been on her way to see a television card painting in Amy School. The glass buildings, traffic lights, and doors full of fruits. On her way to the harbor that never flows and the Golden Gate Bridge. But primarily, she was on her way to the bed of Daniel, her self-fine husband. She kicked the sod at the thought of her marriage. Then shaking her head to forget, she surveyed her camp. It was nice. Upon discovering the wolves, she had settled down to live near them in the hope of sharing their food. Until the sun set and the stars came out to guide her. She had built a house of sod like the summer homes of the old Eskimos. Each brick had been cut with the hulu, and the half-moon-shaped woman's knife. The best that it could trim a baby's hair, slice a bear, and chip an iceberg.
Okay, stop.
Her house was not well built, for she had never made one before, but it was cozy inside. She had windproofed it by sealing the side bricks with mud from the pond at her door, and she had made it beautiful by spreading her caribou brown cloth on the floor. On this, she had placed her sleeping skin, a moose hide bag lined with soft white rabbit skins. Next to her bed, she had built a low table of sod on which to put her clothes when she slept. To decorate her house, she had made three flowers of bird feathers and stuck them in the bottom of the table. Then she had built a fireplace outdoors and placed her pot beside it. The pot was empty, for she had not found even a lemon to eat. Last winter, she had walked to school in barrel. These mice-like rodents were so numerous that they ran out from under her feet wherever she stepped. There were thousands and thousands of them until December, when they suddenly vanished. Her teacher said that the lemmings had a chemical similar to antifreeze in her blood that kept them active all winter, then other little mammals were hibernating. They eat grass and multiply all winter, Mrs. Franklin had said in her sing-song voice. When there are too many, they grow nervous at the sight of each other. Somehow this shoots too much antifreeze in their bloodstreams, and it begins to poison them. They become restless and crazy. Then they run in a frenzy until they die. Okay.
You wanna
roll? Of this phenomenon, my ex's father has simply said, the hour of the lemming is over so, for 4 years. Unfortunately for my ex, the hour of animals that prey on the lemmings was almost also over. The white fox, the snowy owl, the weasel, the jaguar, and the siskins had virtually disappeared. They had no food to eat and bore few or no younger. Those that lived preyed on each other. With the passing of the lemmings, however, the grasses had grown high again, and the hour of the caribou was upon the land. Healthy, fat caribou cows gave birth to many calves. The caribou population increased, and this in turn increased the number of wolves who prey on the caribou. The abundance of the bigger deer of the north did my ex no good, for she had not brought a gun on her trip. It had never occurred to her that she would not reach point. Hope before her food ran out.
Okay.
Oh. A dull pain seized her stomach. She pulled blades of grass from their sheaths and ate the sweet ends. They were not very satisfying. So she picked a handful of caribou moss and lichen. If the deer could survive in winter on this food, why not she? She munched this, decided the plant might taste better if cooked, and went to the pond of water. As she dipped her pot in, she thought about Amarok. Why had the bear his teeth at her? Because she was young and he knew she couldn't hurt him. No, she said to herself, it was because he was speaking to her. He had told her to lie down. She had even understood and obeyed him.
He had talked to her, not with his voice, but with his ears, eyes, and lips. And he had even commended her with a wag of his tail. She dropped her pot, scrambled up the frost heave, and stretched out on her stomach. Amrod, she called softly. I understand what you said. Can you understand me? I'm hungry, very, very hungry. Please bring me some meat. The gray wolf did not look her way as she began to doubt her reasoning. After all, flat ears and a tail wag were scarcely a conversation. She dropped her forehead against the lichens and rethought what had gone between them. Then why did I lie down? She asked, lifting her head and looking at Amarok. Why did I? She called to the yawning wolves, not one turned her way. Amarok got to his feet, and as he slowly rose, he seemed to fill the sky and blot out the sun. He was enormous. He could swallow her without even chewing, but he won't, she reminded herself. Wolves do not eat people. They gossip, talk. What is that? Capuchin? What? Capuchin said, wolves are gentle brothers. The black puppy was looking at her and wagging his tail. Hopefully, Mayax held out a pleading hand to him. His tail wagged harder. The mother rushed to him and stood above him sternly. When he licked her cheek apologetically, she pulled back her lips from her fine white teeth. They flashed and she smiled and forgave her cub. But don't let it happen again, said Myrax, sarcastically mimicking her own elders. The mother walked toward Amarok. I should call you Martha after my stepmother, Myrax whispered. But you're much too beautiful. I shall call you Silver instead. Silver moved into a halo of light, for the sun sparkled on the guard hairs that grew out over the dense under fur, and she seemed to glow.
The reprimanded pup snapped at a crane fly and shook himself. Bits of lichen and grass spun off his fur. He reeled unsteadily, took a water stance, and looked down at his sleeping sister. With a yap, he jumped on her and rolled her to her feet. She whined, he barked, and picked up a bone. When he was sure she was watching, he ran down the slope with it. The sister tagged after him. He stopped, and she grabbed the bone, too. She pulled, he pulled, then he pulled, and she yanked. Miax could not help laughing. The puppies played with bones like Eskimo children played with leather ropes. I understand that, she said to the pups. That's tug of war. Now how do you say I'm hungry? Amarok was pacing restlessly. Along the crest of the frost heaved as if something were about to happen. His eyes shot to Silver, then to Great Wolf Miax had nails. These glance seems to be salmon, for Silver and Nails glided to him. Banked the ground with their forepaws and bit him gently under the chin. He wagged his tail furiously and took Silver's slender nose in his mouth. She crouched before him, licked his cheek, and lovingly bit his lower jaw. Amarok's tail flashed high as her mouthing charged with vitality. He nosed her affectionately, unlike the fox who met his mate only in the breeding season. Amarok lived with his mate all year.
Thank you.
Nick Nail took Amora's jaw in his mouth and deleted a bit the top of his nose. A third of dawn, a small male came slinking up. He got down on his belly before Amora rolled, tumbling to his back and wiggly. Hello, J-Lo, Miak. Who? Hello, J-Lo, Miak whispered. For he reminded her of the what's that word, Miss? Quivering Goose Egg Desert. Her mother and the law maid. She had seen the wolves mouth Amora chime twice before, and so she concluded that it was a ceremony, a sort of hail of the chief.
I don't know where I'm at.
Hey, Miss, I'm going to turn back on.
She had. Page 19.
She had seen the woods mouse Amara trying twice before, as she concluded that it was a ceremony, a sort of hell to the chief. He must indeed be their leader, for he was clearly the wealthy wolf. That is wealthy, as she had known the meaning of the word on the, what's that word? Nunavak Island. There's the old Eskimo hunter she had known in her childhood. Though the riches of life was intelligent, fearlessness in love, a man with these gifts was rich and was a great spirit who was admired in the same way that the Goosas admire a man with money and goods. The three adults paid tribute to Amor until he was most smooth. What's that? Smothered with love. Then he bade a wild note that sounded like the wind on the frozen sea. With that, the others sat around him. The puppies scattered between them. Jello hunched forward, and Silver got a fierce glance at him. Intimidated, Jello pulled his ears together and back. He drew himself down until he looked smaller than ever. Amarok wailed again, scratching his neck until his head was high above the others. They glazed at his, what's that word?
Affectionately,
and it was plain to see that he was their great spirit and royal leader who held his group together with the love of wisdom. I've been saying his name wrong all this time. Make that something.
Any fear Mayax had the wolves was dispelled by their affection for each other. They were friendly animals and so devoted to Amarok that she needed only to be accepted by all. She even knew how to achieve this by him under the chin. But how was she going to do that? She'd studied the pups, hoping they had a simpler way of expressing their love. The black puppy approached the leader, sat, and then laid down and wagged his tail vigorously. He gazed up at Amarok in pure adoration, and the royal eyes softened. Well, that's what I'm doing, Mayax thought. She called Amarok. I'm lying down gazing at you, too. But you don't look at me that way. When all the puppies were wagging his praises, Amarok yipped. Hit a high note and crooned. As his voice rose and fell, the other adults sang out, and the puppies yipped and bounced. The song ended abruptly. Amarok arose and trotted swiftly down the slope. Nails followed, and behind him ran Silver, then Jello. But Jello did not run far. Silver turned and looked him straight in the eye. She pressed her ears forward aggressively and lifted her tail. With the Jello went back to the puppies, and three sped away like dark birds. Mayax hunched forward on her elbows. The better to see and learn. She now knew how to be a good puppy, pay tribute to the leader, and even to be leader by biting others on the top of the nose. She also knew how to tell Jello to babysit. If only she had big ears and a tail, she could lecture and talk to them all.
Flapping her hands on her head for ears, she flattened her fingers to make friends, pulled them together and back to express fear, and shot them forward to display aggression and the menace. Then she folded her arms and studied the puppies again.
The black one greeted Jello by tackling his feet. Another jumped on his tail, and before he could discipline either, all five were upon him. He rolled and tumbled with them for almost an hour. Then he had ran down the slope, turned, and stopped. The pursuing pups plowed into him, tumbled, fell, and lay still. During a minute of surprise recovery, there was no action. Then the black pup flashed his tail like a semaphore signal, and they all jumped on Jello again. Meax rolled over and laughed aloud. That's funny. They're really like kids. When she looked back, Jello's tongue was hanging from his mouth, and his sides were heaving. Four of the pups had collapsed at his feet and were asleep. Jello flopped down too, but the black pup still looked around. He was not the least bit tired. Meax watched him, for there was something special about him. Keep reading. He ran to the top of the den and barked. The smallest pup, whom Meax called Sister, lifted her head, saw her favorite brother in action, and struggling to her feet, followed him devotedly. While they rumbled, Jello took the opportunity to rest behind a clump of sedge, a moisture-moving plant of the tundra. But hardly was he settled before a pup tracked him to his hideout and pounced on him. Jello narrowed his eyes, pressed his ears forward, and showed his teeth.
That's not.
I know what you're saying, she called to him. You're saying lie down. The puppy lay down. And Meax got on all fours, and I looked for the nearest pup to speak to. It was Sister. She whined. And when Sister turned around, she narrowed her eyes and showed her white teeth. Abilene, Sister lay down. I'm talking wolf. Meax clapped, and tossing her head like a pup, crawled in a happy circle. As she was coming down back, she saw all five puppies sitting in a row watching her, their heads cocked in curiosity. Boldly, the black pup came toward her, his fat backside swinging as he trotted to the bottom of her frost heave and barked. "You are very fearless and very smart," she said. "Now I know why you are special. You are wealthy and the leader of the puppies. There is no doubt that you'll grow up to be so. I shall name you after my father." Capuchin, and I shall call you Capu for short. Capu wrinkled his brow and turned an ear to tune and more acutely on her voice. "You don't understand, do you?" Hardly had she spoken then his tail went up, his mouth opened slightly, and he fairly grinned. "Ali," she gasped, "you do understand, and that scares me." She perched on her heels, Jello whined and undulating. No,
and Kapu turned back to the den day and night.
Mias imitated the call to come home. Kias looked back over his shoulder in surprise. She giggled. He wagged his tail and jumped on Jello. She clapped her hands and settled down to watch this language of jumps and tumbles, elated that she was at last breaking the wolf code. After a long time, she decided they are not taking but rough housing, and so she started home. Later, she changed her mind. Rough housing was very important to Woods. It occupied almost the entire night for the pups. Ely, okay, she said, I'll learn to rouse. Maybe then you'll accept me and feed me. She pranced, jumped and whimpered. She growled, snarled and rolled. But nobody came to rouse. Sliding back to her camp, she heard the guys switch and look up to see Amaro and his hunter slept around her frost. He didn't stop about 5 feet away. She could smell the sweet scent of their fur. The hair on her neck rose and her eyes widened. Stop making me do this. Amaro's ears went forward aggressively, and she remembered that wide eyes meant fear to him. It was not good to show him she was afraid. Animals attack the fearful. She tried to narrow them, but remembered that was no right either. Narrow eyes were mean. In depression, she recalled that Capua had moved forward when challenged. She pranced right up to Amaro. Her heart beat fiercely as she grunted when the sound of the puppy began adorning for attention. Then she get down on her belly and grazed at him with fondness.
All right, thank you.
The great wolf packed up and avoided her eyes. She had said something wrong, perhaps even after him. Some slight gesture that meant nothing to her had apparently meant something to the wolf. His ears shot forward angrily, and it seemed all was lost. She wanted to get up and run, but she gathered her courage and pranced closer to him. Swiftly, her patted him under the chin. The signal went off. It sped through his body and triggered emotions of love. Amrock's ears flattened and his tail widened in friendship. He could not react in any other way to the chin pat, for the roots of this signal lay deep in the wolf's history. It had inherited from generations and generations of leaders before him. As his eyes softened in the sweet odor of ambrosia arose from the gland on the top of his tail, and she was drenched lightly in wolf scent. Mayax was one of the pack. All through the sunlight, she waited for Amrock to come home with food for her and the pups. When at last she saw him in the horizon, she got down fours and crawled for her lookout. He carried no food. She cried. The pups must be nervous. That's why there's no meat. Slumping back on her heels, she thought about this. Then she thought again. You can't be nervous. Nursing, she said to Kapu, and plumping her hands on her lips. Silver grows when her growls when her suckle and dries on wave. Kapu twists his ears at the sound of her voice. Okay, she called to him. Why are you getting the food that makes you so fat? He ignored her, concentrating on Silver and Nels, who are coming slowly home from the hunt. My ex went back home to her pot and stuff on the cold, raw moss until her stomach felt up for if it satisfied. Then she crawled into her cozy home in the hope that she sleep would soothe her.
She smoothed the silver hairs of her beautiful wedding parka, then carefully took it off and rolled it up, placing it and her fur pants in a bag made of whale bladder. She tied it securely so that no moisture would dampen her clothes while she slept. This she had learned in childhood, and it was one of the old Eskimo ways that she liked. Perhaps the only one. She had never violated it. Even in a warm, gas-heated house and barrel for damp clothes could mean death in the Arctic. When her outer garments were put away, she took off the bright red tights and her mother-in-law had bought for her American store and barrel. Walking to the pond, she rinsed them and laid them in the sun. The cool air struck her naked body. She shivered and was glad that she had done one thing right. She had worn her winter clothes, not her light summer... What's that word? Kuspuk, the woman's dress. The wind gusted. Miax scrambled through the low door and slid into her sleeping skin. The silken softness of the rabbit fur embraced her, and she pulled the hood around her face so that only her nose was exposed. The fur captured her warm breath, held it against her face, and she became her own radiant stove. In this cozy micro world, she forgot her hunger and recalled what she already knew about the woods so that she could put it together for what she deserved. Right there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I did good.
Wolves are shy. Capuchin had said, and they desert their dens if discovered by man. Yet this pack had not. Did our... What'd you say, miss? Okay, you whoop. Did Amarok not know she was human? Perhaps not. She had never walked in his presence. The two-legged signal of man to wild animals. On the other hand, he must know. Capuchin had said that with one sniff, a wolf knew if you were male or female, adult or child, if you were hunting or not hunting, even if you're happy or sad, she concluded. Now, Armugan tolerated. Remember, tolerated. Where's tolerated? Hold up, miss. Hours at... Capuchin had said that with one sniff, a wolf knew if you're male or female, adult or child. If you were hunting or not hunting, even if you're happy or sad, she concluded that Amarok tolerated her because she was young, had no gun, and was sad, a lost child. I'm reading with excitement. She next considered Nails. Who was he? Amarok's dependable friend. That was true. She suspected he was even more than that. A spiritual father of the pups. Nails took orders from Amarok, but stayed close to Silver and the little wolves. He was farther when their real father was busy. He was Amarok's serious partner. But Jello, who was he? Where had he come from? Was he a pup of a previous year? Or had he joined the pack just as she had? By solicity, Amarok for membership in his tribe. There was much to learn about her family. Mayax did not know how long she slept, for midnight was almost as bright as soon, and it was difficult to judge the passing of time. It did not matter, however. Time in the Antarctic was the rhythm of life. The wolf pups were barking their excited yippoo that rang out the hour of the end of the hunt. The pack was coming home with visions of caribou still in her head. She got out of her sleeping skin and reached for her clothes. The puppies may not have been eating, but certainly Amarok would have to bring Jello some food. He had been home all night. Stepping into sunlight, she put on her tight, danced a moment, and then pulled on her furs. Leaning over the pond, she saw in the glassy water the hollows of her cheeks. She was pleased, for she looked almost like the Cossack girls in the magazines and movies. Thin and gaunt, not moon-faced like an Eskimo. Her hair, she leaned closer to the tundra, looking glass. Her hair was a mess, pressing into place with her hands. She wished she had taken Daniel's wedding brush and comb with her. They lay unused in the corner of a table drawer in the house at Barrow.